What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the White Belt Podcast. My name is Fernandez, and I have a bit of a different episode for you today. If you've been here before, you know the show is about the intersection between movement and mindsets and the practical tools that help us be more effective, both in training and in mental preparation. But today, I want to share with you a story, one of the most powerful stories I've ever come across, of someone who has applied those lessons and done it for themselves to overcome some incredible challenges in their life. My guest today is Nick Mitch. Nick's actually a past client of mine, and he's a member at the Movement Collective, where I'm currently teaching. And Nick has an incredible story of using movement to overcome his experience with chronic pain. I'm not going to spoil too many things or give too many details away. I'm going to let Nick drop in and tell you this, but this is really one of the most inspiring stories of overcoming what was an incredible rock bottom for years and years of his life, being bedridden because of chronic pain from, you know, a pretty drastic ski accident that he had when he was in his late teens. And this is more the story of what is possible with the commitment to the belief that you can do something if you just keep on trying, no matter how hard it gets. Nick wanted me to mention as well that he is now completely able to manage his own pain. The stim that he had put in his spine that you'll hear him talk about, he's now had surgery got removed and is able to manage his pain without it. I want to say a massive thank you up front to Nick for being so incredibly courageous in coming on and sharing his story in the way that he did. Massive shout out to Nick, man. Much love. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. So without any further ado, please welcome Nick Mitch.
When I was younger, I loved exercise, but I think mostly because I was like pretty good at it. I grew up really early, like I was a big guy, you know, hand-eye coordinated, all that natural stuff. So I was good at it. I liked the praise. So I, you know, leaned into it.
Yeah.
And I found rowing. And rowing was, you know, the one thing that I sort of hung my hat on.
Mm-hmm.
Did really well. You know, got a couple of national championships, all that good stuff. But I would say things changed for me when I was 15 or 16, it's 2011, some sort of math include. I had a ski accident, and it was quite an innocuous accident. You know, I got back up, you know, my ribs hurt, and, you know, landed on my ribs and stomach, and, you know, it hurt, it was bruised. But nothing too serious. Got up and kept skiing for the next 3 days. And then the pain got really bad one day on the bus ride home. It was like the first 10 out of 10 I've ever felt in my entire life. And, you know, for a 15-year-old that's sort of like never felt anything like that before, it's pretty scary. But then it sort of like died down a little bit, and it didn't come back at that intensity, but it was still strange.
Yeah.
No one knew what was going on. So got investigated, you know, and my pancreas was a little bit inflamed. That was what they saw on the ultrasound. There was a hematoma on my liver, small one. They were like, maybe it's that. Not sure. We're not really sure what's going on. And so that sort of just stayed there. The pain after that accident never went away. It's like if you just had an accident. The pain wasn't bad enough that, you know, I thought I was dying, but
it
wasn't fun either. And that pain didn't go anywhere for the next year and a half.
Where was the pain specifically?
Specifically, it was here. It was like dead center of like the upper abdominals.
Yeah.
You know, stomach, pancreas area, sort of like that. It's really hard to determine depth when you're like trying to judge. It's just like, how deep is this pain that I'm experiencing right now? So I was always really bad at describing it as well to anyone that was asking, but I kept rowing and I became more and more aware of how much and how consistently my stomach was actually hurting, you know, through that next year and a half. And it became more and more, overwhelming, and I was, you know, we were still getting investigations. Oh my gosh, I'm not really sure what's going on. And my rowing was starting to impact my rowing. Because obviously rowing's hard enough without like an incredible amount of pain, like just in your abdominal wall. And then a lot of personal things happened, you know, my family situation changed. Parents got divorced, blah, blah, blah. And the pain kept getting worse. And we can dig into it further later if you'd like to, but for the next 6 years, that pain kept getting worse. And as the pain sort of kept increasing, my physical conditioning decreased as well. What would happen is like the level of exercise that I was doing would become too painful and I'd step that down.
Right.
And then my pain would acclimatize to that that level of exercise and then I'd have to step it down again. So it was from, elite tier rowing down to just gymming and regular running or something like that. And then it was like, get rid of the running, just gymming, and then it was down to, some light body work and some walking and, but the pain was the same, but my conditioning was getting worse, so that kept getting worse for the next 6 to 7 years. Jeez. At that point. And during that time, I became more and more immobile. I had to move home because I couldn't take care of myself anymore because the pain was at such a level.
Yeah.
And I was having surgeries and I was having procedures and, had 5 neurectomies, which didn't really help.
Do you want to just describe what that is?
They identified particular nerves, 4 of which were along my ribs and another down here sort of in my abdominal wall. And they snipped it. So
they snipped a nerve?
They cut it, yeah. It's not a recommended procedure, and everyone who was a part of it was pretty uncomfortable going ahead with it, naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yourself included.
Yeah, I suppose desperation is a crazy thing. I think it speaks to how much pain I was in for that time. And eventually it was just at the point for about maybe 3 years or so, I was just I spent a lot of time in bed. I really just couldn't handle moving at all.
Yeah.
If I was feeling feisty, I'd sit up in my chair and play some video games. And so as you can imagine, when you do nothing at all for 3 or 4 years, longer, if you're feeling inclined, it was hard to see what was happening to my body.
Yeah.
During that time, something that I really valued prior to all of this happening. But I felt like I had a loss of control there. I didn't feel like... So during that time, it's not like I very much tried to fight it, Like I would got my parents to buy me some gym equipment for, the home. And I'd try and do some core workout or I'd try and do some, light weight lifting, some band work, or I'd try to go for a walk. But every time I gave it a crack, the pain later that day or that night would become excruciating and I'd end up in hospital.
Yeah.
And this happened time after time after time. And that started in around 2014, 2015.
How old were you then?
Matt. 20 years old. So I got hurt when I was 15, 16.
Yep.
And then I was moved home. It started when I was at college in Sydney, which was in around 20. I was there from 2013 to 2016, and things started getting really unmanageable 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
And I lived next to a hospital and I was a regular there. So all I remember from that time was how much it hurt. And then quite a blur for a number of years where nothing very much happened. I was looking for answers. I was looking for ways to help the pain, and that was my entire life. Eventually I went through the process with my pain consultant, I'd heard about a spinal stimulator surgery around 2017 2018. Obviously wasn't excited about the prospect of being a 20-year-old with something in your spine.
Yeah.
Didn't on the surface sound great to
me. Yeah.
I was kind of just like, what? No.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Yeah. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I know it's crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing was changing either. I was doing all the things I had to do. It was, you know, taking my medication and seeing therapists, and, you know, I was, did a lot of pain psychology during that time, which is a different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
But yeah, it took me about a year and a half before I said, I'm kind of at the end of my rope here.
Yeah.
You know, I can't deal with this. I'll try anything.
Yeah.
You know, and he was just like, you just need to, you know, talk to me again in 6 months, you know, be consistent, try and keep it together, and then we'll go ahead with it. So ended up going ahead with it eventually. Incredibly uncomfortable, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
Something like just felt like this pressure in my spine.
Yeah.
And they put it in. You know, it's not big, it's just like a wire that they feed up your spinal column that's attached to a battery in your pocket of fat in the lower bit of your back. Mm-hmm.
And what was that designed to do?
Yeah, okay, so that was designed to, the way that it was explained to me, or at least the way that I have remembered it, is that there's only so many signals, like, your spinal column can send up the afferent and efferent pathway, so up to your spine, up to your brain, and then back down and out into your body.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that the spinal stimulator occupies a number of those pathways through stimulation. So,
right.
I don't know if it actually physically shakes or anything like that, but I felt like I was shaking.
Yeah.
It's like a TENS machine. I don't know if like anyone has seen or like if you've ever used one, but basically they have those pads and they put it on and it's like
a
little buzzing.
Yeah.
You know? So I felt like that inside my body. And it was,
How often is this happening?
How often was
the spinal stimulator active?
Oh, it's all the time.
100%.
Consistently all the time. Yeah. So easy to forget eventually, but by no means comfortable.
Yeah.
But still different. A different sensation than the pain.
Yeah.
So welcome in that respect.
Yeah.
So this is in 2019, May 20th, 2019. I didn't weigh myself at the time, but I think I was about 140 kilos, maybe high 130s. You know, I hadn't moved further than 100 meters in a day, in like years.
Yeah.
And, you know, mental health was, in the gutter, as you could probably imagine.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I've got this pain from this stimulator surgery that when I came out of, I felt no different.
Yeah.
You know, like the pain was the same when I came out of that surgery, even though it was on. Could feel the sensation, but I still felt the pain. So I was pretty demoralized by that as well.
Yeah.
So that's the other half of the turning point, I suppose. Keep rolling.
Yeah, man, this is like, I really appreciate you sharing this, dude.
Bit of a rant.
That's what these podcasts
are. Rant, podcasting.
Rant home. No, man, like I genuinely really appreciate you sharing this. Like I honestly cannot even imagine what that is like to go through. So if you're open to it, man, I'm just to ask you some more questions about like what it was actually like at the time. Like if you take me back to the time where you... Because something that really jumped out to me from what you shared is that there was so many times where you tried to do the right thing every single step along the way.
Mm.
Tried to do the thing that was best for your health. It was so much more than so many other, you know, I know in the past I've struggled with just doing the right thing, even though I don't have anything hugely hanging over my head.
Mm.
And for you to continually try to do the thing that's best for your health and your pain and do all the things that everyone knows that we should be doing, and to still come up against the pain getting worse and worse and worse, like to the point where you can't even move.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievably frustrating is the word. And, because it's particularly frustrating for me because I've always enjoyed exercise. I've always enjoyed moving, you know, it's always been something I've derived a lot of satisfaction from.
Yeah.
you know, to have felt like, you know, couldn't have been in more peak condition in my life, you know, in my late teens to all of a sudden this, you know, the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know, it was something that I had difficulty with, and I'm not sure I even have still let go of.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
You know, it's just like, oh, but what if I'd been able to keep training and I could have kept going, you know? So that was difficult. It was difficult, and I was holding on to this time that I had to let go of in order to survive and accept my reality at the time. As far as being in it, my dad put it also wonderfully when we were speaking to a pain doctor who said one of the sort of main credos of pain psychology is acceptance. You have to accept your situation, you know. It's not going to change. You have to accept this new reality, and it's kind of bleak.
Yeah.
It's not kind of, it's incredibly bleak.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, to just understand that, you know, pain is now going to be an eternal part of your life. And my dad and I both not enjoying hearing this. Dad said, what if I came back tomorrow and kept hitting you on the finger for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because we were both frustrated.
Yeah.
But for me, I mean, I remember waking up every morning and for a fraction of a second, I forgot that that there was anything wrong. And then it hit me. You know, and that was it and that was the best I would feel throughout the day. And then every day I knew it would get worse and worse and worse, for whatever reason, not sure. Started at 3, ended at 6 or something like that. I've been told my scale is off, but you know, that's just the way it is. So yeah, the reality was extremely difficult to accept, for me and for anyone who saw me at the time. Particularly my family. It was it's hard to watch anyone that you love go through something like that.
Yeah. And how are you spending your time? How are you passing your day? What does a day look like in that time?
Oh, I mean, you know, my days became, over the years, you know, I was able to do less and less, you know, so I started at university, I was studying exercise and sports science, funnily enough. And because, you know, that's what I love and that's what I enjoyed, but, I think the stress always made the pain worse. The stress of studying, the stress of exams. And then eventually it was, sitting up was also quite, unfortunately, quite overwhelming, you know, just sitting up in the chair, engaging your core, you know, use your core for everything. So, you know, the wrong spot for, chronic pain. You know, so during that time, I was trying to do university sort of early around 2013 to 2016. I was trying to do my studies and I was trying to spend time with my friends at college. I made some incredible friends at college. I was very lucky. Once I decided that I needed to try and enjoy my time as opposed to just grinding my head against the axe. But after I left college, it was a different story. You know, it was the point where I couldn't take care of myself anymore. Yeah. You know, the pain was too much and nothing occupied my day. I, you know, played video games. I did anything to distract myself from the pain. You know, that was number one. My psychologist at the time, acutely aware of the reality, told me to just survive. Yeah. You know, do whatever it takes. That was the feedback I had around 2016, 2017. Just survive, just get through it right now. And that lasted for around 3 years.
Jesus.
Yeah.
When did that start? What was the first kind of glimmer that something might be about to change?
For the better?
Yeah.
There was no glimmer. You know?
Towards the the tail end.
Yeah, no, towards the tail end. There was no glimmer.
Yeah, cool.
No. For me, it was you know, it wasn't like, oh, you know, when I thought about the stimulator, it was not positive.
Right.
It was,
it was survival.
Yeah.
It was, let's see what happens with this thing.
Yeah. Just another thing in the long line of things that have been tried.
Another thing in the long... It was, yeah, exactly. I couldn't... I had had hope dashed so many times.
Yeah.
So many surgeries. So, you know, neurectomies, nerve ablations, which is like a partial chemical neurectomy. So, like, they burn, or like, they, you know, the nerve stops functioning for approximately 6 months or so.
Yeah.
You know, different pain medications. I had cortisol injected into scar tissue in my abdomen to physically break it up, you know, in case it was in case it was compressing nerves. I had shunts put in my pancreas. I had shunts fall out of my pancreas, giving me actual pancreatitis, you know, accidentally.
Yeah.
You know, there was all these things, and every time, you know, for years it was like, oh, this is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one. And
yeah.
It was, and unfortunately it was never the one.
Yeah.
So eventually that hope was not helpful.
Yeah.
It wasn't, didn't serve me.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me, this, the stimulator was merely another in a line of probable failures.
Yeah.
You know? And as I said, had the stimulator put in, and nothing really felt that different. You know, I felt the sensation I described before,
mm-hmm.
But the pain was still there and it was still extremely evident to me.
Yeah.
Hurts just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm not entirely pain free to do that, you know. I don't remember the point where it changed or where I could say that I changed. I remember everything I did.
Yeah.
I remember everything that was happening, but I don't. And it frustrates me that I can't remember it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the light switching on.
Yep.
You know, all I saw was the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what did happen was I rested up for about a month after the surgery, disappointed and frustrated that nothing had changed. And I went through the motions with the physiotherapist, getting used to the stimulator being present in my back. I did multiple sessions with the company that creates the stims. So they tried different types of stimulation at different intensities. So they changed it from like a continuous thing to like burst patterns,
right,
and different intensities. And they tried different pathways. I couldn't give you the specifics of that. All I remember was playing with the remote. And having them change on me. And, you know, it was just like, well, just go try this for 2 weeks and come back and we'll see how that feels.
Yep.
So that's what I remember.
Yeah.
The feedback from the physiotherapist at the time was, you're not going to be able to move. The pain's always going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, this is just another management tool.
Yeah.
And I suppose at that point I said politely and inside my own head, fuck you, I won't accept that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the time I was... And not to discredit the physiotherapist and my doctor, the pain clinic was part of a life-changing team that helped me. But I didn't want to accept any limitations on what I was capable of. As I said, I'm not sure at what point I started thinking like that.
Yeah.
But I knew I needed to get out of this environment that had what it felt like a roof over my head.
Yes.
That said, this is how people with chronic pain progress.
Yeah.
This is how, this is kind of what they're capable of. And this is kind of always how they're going to feel.
Yeah.
I had never been good at accepting what, you know, the pain full stop, which probably made it the journey more difficult for me, you know, not accepting like a certain reality for myself. Yeah. But I looked elsewhere. And I was just like, I'm going to go see an exercise physiologist. Maybe they'll know something. Or not know something, actually. I was just like, okay, I haven't done anything for 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure where to go from here, but even when I was younger and, you know, to this day, I was like, but I'd love to lose some weight. Yeah. You know, I was 100 and what kilos. I was a big guy.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand on one leg. You know, that was kind of like a thing that stood out for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't bend over to put stuff in the dishwasher. You know, movement was like, my day was difficult.
Yeah.
You know, by virtue of, you know, having been immobile for what, and just realizing this is where I was. But I said, I want to get out of the house every single day. That was what I was thinking. I was just like, I'd love to go to the gym and just be around people, because that's something that I haven't been able to do and something that I haven't, you know.
So by this time, the stim was giving you enough relief that you could move around somewhat?
You know what? That's not actually how it went down.
Okay.
What I decided, it was more of a decision. Well, you know, because it said, I don't feel any different right now. But I'm going to make the stim work. That was the thought process behind it. I was like, I'm pretty sure this is supposed to do something, but I also know it's not going to do everything I need.
Yeah.
You know? And so the physical aspect of it was, the pain was still the same at the time. But I knew that it wasn't going to get any better if I didn't grab my health by the reins and help myself along, you know? And so, much like all those other times that I had tried, I just took another... I tried one more time.
Yeah.
And that was when I reached out to the exercise physiologist. And I said, I would like a program, you know, that is not so intense that it'll scare me off doing anything. I want it to be light enough that I can go and get out of the house 7 days a week every single day, yeah. You know, because I want to go... Because I want to get out of the house 7 days a week... And be around people, not because I wanted to work out 7 days a week. Kind of wanted to work out 7 days a week, but yeah. You know, I'd never been able to.
Yeah.
So the idea was like, it would be good for me to get out of the house. That was what I was thinking. I think that was an incredible decision in retrospect.
Yeah.
The reason I think it was the best decision I made was I was for two reasons. The first is, the exercise physiologist gave me a program that was so beyond small or beyond challenging in my eyes, you know, having come from like an elite sporting background, that it was insulting. If I was looking at this program and I was just like, you're joking, mate. What the hell is this? You know?
What kind of stuff was in there?
1 kilo bicep curls, standing wall push-ups. I pushed myself off the wall.
Yeah.
Sitting down onto a chair, taking a break, and then properly standing back up. What else was in there? Walking on the treadmill, holding the rails at 2 kilometers an hour. Things that you just look at and you're just like, I'm not going to get any better doing this.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to do anything. The treadmill was especially humbling, because that was really difficult. I really needed to hold the rails for
some. Yeah.
It was painful. You know, standing for me was an incredibly painful endeavor at that point. You know, I needed the help, and I needed to actually just put one foot in front of the other, like not walking at like, you know, 5 kilometers an hour, like whatever is a typical walking speed. I know it's close to that. But at the time, none of it was about getting better. It was about moving.
Yeah.
You know, it was about doing something. It was about being around other people. It was about forming good habits, you know, all these other things, you know, because technically I was capable of doing more than that. You know, anyone is sort of capable.
Sure.
I would say anyone is capable of, you know, 2 kilogram bicep curl,
right,
for example, you know, but it wasn't about that. It was about confidence. It was about, you know, all these other things. You know, so after weeks, and I did that program every single day for 6 months.
The same program?
The same program.
Damn, dude.
Every single day, you know, so proud.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, I was like, I didn't have a day off. I did not have a day off in that time. And, you know, after weeks and weeks, you know, I slowly increased everything, you know, like I got that 2 kilo dumbbell curl, you know. I slowly brought the push-ups down, like on a, towards an incline push-up. It's really difficult. I was still quite heavy. You know, my walking speed got up to 4 or 5 kilometers per hour after 6 months. Walking was really difficult.
Yeah.
Like consistent walking was very, yeah, probably one of the more challenging aspects of what I was trying to recuperate from.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was 6 months for me. And, you know, eventually it became more challenging, you know, but by that point the habits were there. I was around people, you know, just checking people out of the gym. It was great. And I had more confidence to bend over or squat down and put something in the dishwasher and to walk, you know, to my shower and to walk around my house, and all these things became slowly easier and easier. And that's where I started. That's where it changed. So that's a period of my life that was incredibly difficult, but it was a decision that I was incredibly proud of. And the second reason I was so proud of that was because the reason I had hurt myself so, the reason that I believe in retrospect that I was struggling so much to try and do the right things when I was sort of sick was because I was going too hard. Because I was trying to do the things that I was doing when I was rowing competitively.
Wow.
And I was trying to walk back in at this intensity, you know, that was beyond not what I might have been physically capable of, but what was going to increase the pain to an extent. You know, it wasn't about what I was capable of, but it was about the pain.
Yeah.
You know, and by employing that exercise physiologist, John, legend, he brought me so far back from what I thought was something that I would do or could do, you know, insultingly so, that he got it behind the line of what was going to increase the pain to the point where I would not go back the next day, which was the whole idea.
So you could finish one of those workouts and go home, and it wouldn't necessarily be more painful after that.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't bad enough that I wouldn't go back the next day.
Yeah.
Wouldn't scare myself.
Yeah. That is immensely powerful. And it's so, to me, that's also fascinating, because that is the same way that, you know, when I'm working someone with an injury and they've got, they're doing, well, even when we started doing dips, and you're one of your most recent programs, you were doing dips and they would cause you pain. So it was just progressing to a certain extent until you can do the thing without making the pain worse after that and slowly expand that rate of motion. But that's dialed back to the absolute earliest step. And it just, it's fascinating that principle stays applicable even in the deepest depths of chronic pain.
Yeah. And I think for me, and I think probably for a lot of people, you know, this might be a bit controversial, but I know, the hardest thing about going to the gym and doing 1 kilo dumbbell curls and wall push-ups and walking at 2 kilometers was my ego.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I don't want to go in front of all these people that are working out and do these things that everyone, I'm pretty sure everyone else can do. You know, I was embarrassed.
Yeah.
You know, I just had a history behind me that was so much bigger than that embarrassment at that point. It was so much more important for me to take care of myself in that respect, you know?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of reshaping that occurred. But yeah, I mean, even with dips recently, trying to rehab my shoulder, I didn't want to go back to stable dips.
Yeah.
It's like, I can do ring dips.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a person who can do ring dips, therefore I'm not going to go back and do stationary dips.
Yeah.
Even if my shoulder hurts, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know? but you just need someone just to need to check yourself just for 2 seconds. And yeah, it's the same principle, you know, but it's not an obvious principle.
No.
And the how far we should pull it back is probably typically further than most people would enjoy. People don't enjoy taking back steps, I suppose.
I think it's such an important message. I can really reflect on the times where I've injured myself, and it always has been ego.
Mm.
And not even like it's ego plus biomechanics or ego plus some kind of training error, but it's the where it goes beyond the time where I know I could have stopped and dialed it back. Mm. That's been the thing. And I think it's an interesting perspective. The fact that you were dealing with so many other things and still that the such a human thing that is pride. Mm. Can still be one of the most palpable things in that time.
Yeah.
So I'd love for you to just kind of bring this home. And you've been doing this for 6 months. What did you feel like after 6 months? And what was the road to then? Because when I met you, you just joined the Movement Collective.
Yeah.
And what was the road to that?
Yeah. Okay. I suppose home is after I met you.
Yeah.
But before that... That 6 month period got me to the start of COVID. Start of 2020. So I'd just done this 6 months of the same thing. I don't know why I didn't change anything. I was just committed to the committed to the process at the time.
It was like working.
Exactly. I was improving. I was like, I don't need to change anything. I'm still getting the same amount of gains. I don't need to mix
it. So excellent at work.
Yeah, exactly. And got to COVID. I was studying online at the time, but I was still 128 kilos. That's the number that I remember sort of taking a gaze at this point. And I'd obviously lost 5 to 10 kilos just by virtue of being able to move around and stuff, but not really changing my diet in any way. But then COVID hit and my mum said, don't worry about it. It's not going to be a big deal. And I said, I think you're wrong, but we'll see what happens. Take that.
That's funny. I was the opposite. My mom was like freaking out. I was in Sri Lanka at the airport and she was like, make sure you wear a mask. I'm like, man, these people is what are these?
Yeah, and that's just a cold.
It's just going to blow over, man. I have my words.
And obviously once we had a better idea of how long this is going to do with the lockdown started coming in, I was just like, this is kind of an opportunity for me because I'd sort of stalled, you know, personally, physically, and emotionally for, you know, 6 to 7 years during that time. It's not like I was, you know, I might have been gaining some perspective. I mean, all experience is some experience. Mine was just different, but I didn't do much. Yeah. I had full stop, you know. I spent a lot of time with my therapist. That's about all I did. But I saw it as an opportunity for me. I don't want to be disrespectful in any respect for that, but I was like, all right, I'm going to lock in here for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to really take charge of my health. You know, this is a time to really focus on me and take care of myself. What can I achieve in this time? And so I just started reading and I started trying to learn as much as I possibly could about physical and mental health and well-being. And it was an incredible time for me. You know, I learned so much. You know, I started playing around with my diet a little bit more. I started different types of training. I tried to go back to rowing. I immediately started deadlifts, but my ego got in the way and I hurt my back. And then I realized that I didn't know how to deadlift or do squats in a safe way. You know, I'd just done them when I was younger, when you can get away with anything, you know? So I went back and I saw, I went to the same place, but my exercise physiologist had gone at that point. And so I saw someone else, George Hermes, just up the road, actually.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, she taught me how to deadlift, you know, and I'd really hurt my back at this point and I was really concerned actually because my idea was like, I'd like to get back to rowing. But, you know, my back was really hurting and, you know, all these questions came in like, is it because the stim's in there? You know, have I done something there? Have I just got normal back pain from someone who's sort of like trying to deadlift more than they should have, something like that. But, you know, I wasn't going to get an answer to that, unfortunately. The other thing I could do was, as we said, start behind the point that I made things too much worse. Refine the technique a little bit, get rid of all the weight, and let's start building some core strength. Let's start building some glute strength. Learned all about anterior and posterior pelvic tilt for the first time, which I just thought was fascinating. I'm not sure why that particular fact was so fun to me, but you know, I started seeing a chiropractor because I was like, why not? Let's try. Don't tell my doctor, he doesn't know. I was just trying all these different things. I wasn't married to any one approach, but I was trying to learn. That's where I was at this point, and I was just putting in different plans and trying to execute different strategies, you know, for me. So I started, and a big thing for me was like, I'm going to get under 100 kilos.
Mm.
That was the other thing for me. I was like, I'm going to get in good shape.
Yeah.
I'm going to look good.
Yeah.
I'm not real good.
Yeah. Fucking
none of you are going to be ready for you know, but I was 128 kilos and I was staring down the barrel of 30 like kilos. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Mm.
This is going to be so hard. I love pizza. I love sugar. I used to, you know, it was a strategy that I had when I was sick, you know, but, you know, just comfort eating.
Yeah.
You know, having a real bad day with pain.
Yeah.
Take the gloves off. I get a pizza, smash some cookies. I'll throw some soft drink on top of that. Maybe I'll throw some chippies in, you know, like. That was a very natural thing for me at that point. It's been 3 or 4 years of, you know, using that as one of my defense mechanisms during that time. And those defense mechanisms don't go away without a little impetus.
100%.
Right? So the pain was still there, even though I was moving better, which was fantastic. And I realized I had some really bad eating habits. They weren't serving me anymore. They weren't working for me. You know, but I applied the same thing. You know, let's see what we can do about, you know, when am I eating like this?
Hmm.
You know, why am I eating like this? Just started sort of being a little bit more aware of it. I tried not to judge myself because I still do it. Everyone, you know,
100%.
when you're trying to break habits like that, particularly eating, it's unbelievably difficult.
Yes,
it's like it's maybe one of the hardest things I've ever done, trying to break those particular habits. For some reason, it's just like, you know, it was a go-to for me. So the only thing I did, so my method, I suppose, if you want to call it that, was I was like, I'm going to start this new fresh diet that I've started today. So I started calorie counting. That was my way of going about it. I didn't mind eating the same thing every day. Mm. What I didn't mind eating the same thing every day. Yeah. But that was something. So, you know, I also didn't have a great understanding of how much someone my size was supposed to be eating.
Mm.
You know, so the top range of the meal plan that I made was like 1,800 calories at the time. I was 130 kilos, very restrictive, you know. You know, and unsurprisingly, the first 50 times I tried to do this, it didn't work. I'd get through Monday, I'd get through Tuesday, and then by Wednesday, I was like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
you know, and then I'd eat as much as I could.
Yeah,
you know, I'm with it. But the one thing I didn't do, right, was I said, you know what, I'm going to change it a little bit and I'm going to start again on Monday. You know, I was like, just give yourself the weekend off, don't judge yourself. Change it up a little bit and we'll go again, you know?
Yeah.
And then every single week, I was like, I'm going to get to Wednesday this time.
Mm,
okay?
Nice.
I'm going to get to Wednesday. I'm change it up a little bit and I'm going to get to Wednesday, you know? And then eventually get to Wednesday. I was like, okay, sweet. And then I'd end up eating, you know, again. You could say what you want about reinforcing bad habits in terms of like, you know, breaking in a very, or like, you know, breaking if you want to call it. But I found it worked for me. I was just like, take the judgment out for the rest of the day. It didn't work out. Let's try again.
Yeah.
You know? And just keep being aware of why we're doing this. You know, let's just keep observing, you know, why am I eating like this? You know, am I, you know, little did I know, I was just eating far too little for
Yeah, sure.
But it was a time for me where I was also became, I was engaging in a little bit more discipline every single time I was working that muscle, you know, I was still training at the time, but the food thing for me is and always has been my Achilles heel to an extent, you know, it's,
Food is fucking delicious. And And what I like about this is what it's like.
Mm.
This is not the perfect plan. No. This is not, hey, here's the method that's going to work. This is what it's really
but
like.
But it will.
Yeah. And you can buy my meals like right now. Yeah, if you first me up. First $12, get a free set of
like and subscribe.
No, like this is, you know, it's littered with quote unquote failure or just trying something and it not working.
Yeah.
This is, you know, with injury, with changing your habits around food, right? Getting into the gym, right? You know, even if you're doing the right things and you're doing them in a way that's still self-destructive to your self-confidence in terms of the self-hatred around even very, very fit people who are still hating on the, you know, their own bodies. Any internal habit that's driven, that's linked to something very, very deep and painful is incredibly fucking difficult to change.
Mm.
And it does not happen overnight. It doesn't, as inane as that sounds to say, what I really love, what I'm really getting from the story that you're telling is that it's not perfect.
No.
And it's not, it's certainly not pleasant. And it's not like there's this one perfect thing that's not going to hurt anyone's feelings. And it's not going to, you know, push any of the wrong buttons. It's not going to make some other bad habits as well down the track.
Mm.
But it's that really messy, brutal, step-by-step thing that kind of is the way that change is made sometimes.
No, I mean, that's, I mean, I did it until it worked.
Yeah.
You know, I did it, I repeated this process for about 6 months old.
Yeah.
And then got midway through 2020. I got to the point where I was kind of tired of falling off the wagon making mistakes.
Isn't
you know, I was kind of just like, okay, let's set myself a goal.
Mm.
You know, let's see what I'm actually capable of seeing now. I've practiced this a lot. I've made a lot of plans. I've practiced executing. They haven't all gone perfectly, you know. But, you know, I eventually settled on, you know, don't take this to the bank, but, you know, I was like, I'm just going to do the keto diet. I'm going to do the keto diet for 12 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me feel good. I can study during it. Like, you know, some people find good cognitive benefits from it. Like when you're training and when you're in a calorie deficit, you know, so I felt quite awake when I was on the keto diet and still training quite aggressively in a calorie deficit.
Sure.
And so I was like, I'm going to do this for 12 weeks. You know, so I was 120 kilos at the start of this. Or 116, something like that. So I had lost weight in that 6 months, which I suppose I should, you know, it's a congratulatory as well, you know, give myself credit for that.
Yeah.
But I did bounce up and down a lot as well. You know, I made lots of gains and then I sort of like bounced back up a little bit. And then, but I gave myself this 12 weeks. I was just like, what am I really capable of here? Let's have a real crack here, you know? And I was still in this incredible calorie deficit, at the time, like way less than would be suggested for someone of my body type and size at that point. But I locked in, you know, and I was just like, you know, this maybe isn't going to be the healthiest thing that I've ever done, but maybe that's not what this is about. Maybe this is a small time in my life where I want to prove to myself that you can do something you're very proud of. You know, like I still felt unhealthy and I felt like I tried and I wanted to execute. You know, this was a time where I wanted to, what I thought at the time was like, I want to finish the job. I was I was just like, I want to get there. I really want to get there for all the good and all the bad associated with, you know, weight loss and the image it has. It was what I wanted, you know, and you know what, so during that time, in that 12-week period, I went down from 116 to about 94 kilos.
Damn.
Which was about a 22-kilo loss.
Yeah.
Math. And yeah, so I got a DEXA scan at the start and the end of it, you know, just sort of locked things in. I was just like, I might show you pictures if you're if you're lucky. And and you know what it did. I would never do what I did again.
Mm.
Let me be the first to say that. It was very, it was difficult. And, you know, I wouldn't do it that way again. But I think you'll find everyone says, I know a bit more now. I think that I know a better way of doing that. You know, it was quick and it was hard. But you know what? I set out to do what I set out to do. I proved to myself that I was capable of doing something like that. You know, it's hard to find the right words, but I was proud of what I achieved. After that point, I obviously had a small break. I was like, let's just sort of take a chill for a second. You know, I started eating a bit more holistically and whatnot. I put on a little bit more weight, went back to 100 kilos, and I was like, you know, this is fine.
Yeah.
You know, we're cool here. And then I found the Movement Collective. Not long after that, I think I was seeing my exercise physiologist still at the time, and you know, for one reason or another, you know, there was some winging in my scap, in my scapula, you know, like just some weakness in my lats and my rhomboids, and I was having trouble with my pull strength, you know, couldn't get a pull up. And they sent me down to Damien Cooper, who used to be the osteopath.
Yeah.
Shout out, Damo, and. Annoyingly, I found this open gym space that I had been looking for about a year prior to that. I was just like, you're fucking kidding.
Yeah.
This thing was literally 100 meters down the road from my exercise physiologist this entire time.
What was the reason you were looking for something like that? What was
the reason? I kept hurting myself by overdoing things in the typical gym. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a good understanding of the biomechanics of the body, and in particular, I kept hurting my shoulder. And I wanted to switch to calisthenics purely because I thought it looked cooler. You know, for me, it wasn't, it was easy for me to put numbers on the bar in a regular gym. But it wasn't fun. You know, I was just getting stronger and I was increasing my sets and reps, and, you know, the idea was like put muscle and, you know, lose weight. It was very analog, and it wasn't actually. Yeah, and it wasn't fun. So I thought, you know, I'd like to mix things up, but I'd like to do it in a place as opposed to just doing it on my own. Because I did calisthenics at home, but, you know, as anyone else should do calisthenics, did my push-ups, did my pull-ups where I could, and I didn't know there was skills training out there like this that would be so engaging, which I would come to find later. But I don't know. There was this moment that happened earlier on after I did my little 6 months entry course into movement, where my physiotherapist gave me glute bridges to do. I don't know how to describe it with audio, but she was like, you know, do this three sets, 10 sets of 10 reps of three sets, you know, every single morning when you get up, just do that. And the idea is to eventually get it to one leg so that you can do one leg of glute bridges. And I was like, okay, you know, but I hadn't really made any progress or anything like that. I was still doing those basic exercises at the gym most days. So I didn't believe I was ever going to be where I am today, basically. But 8 weeks of, you know, for some reason I was just on a tear at the time. And 8 weeks, three sets of 10 reps, glute bridges every single morning. And after 8 weeks, I got my leg off. You know, got my first set of 10 on one leg. And for me, that was a moment that was just like that was an eye-opening moment for me, because I realized that I had forgotten if I was consistent and I persevered and I put in work, I would actually improve. I had forgotten that. Like, just at my core, I had forgotten that very basic thing, that I could improve if I put in a little bit of effort.
Wow.
And I felt that so deeply when I got that one-legged glute bridge, this small little exercise, you know? But I remember where I was, and I remember where I was to this day, you know, when I got it, and I was just like, oh my gosh, we tried at the start of this 8 weeks and I could not get off the ground. Yeah, so that was very powerful for me. And so
that really hit home for me, man. Because I have never been in chronic pain. I have no idea what that's like, but I have been incredibly depressed, and I know what it's like to completely forget that I have any ability to improve the situation and the suffering that I feel.
Mm.
It can feel, after it's been so long for me, like it's just, it's like a habit.
Yeah.
Being in mental, or I can also imagine physical pain, becomes habitual.
Mm.
And it becomes the life that it became the life I was used to. It became my reality.
Mm.
And I don't think I'd ever had anybody sit me down and tell me, hey man, if you do something, this can improve. Especially because for me, when I was in my periods of deepest depression, it just kept snowballing, and I didn't know why it was going that way, and just kept going, just kept getting worse.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that it was what it was until almost it was too late.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, big part of depression is that lack of hope.
Yes.
You know? It's just like, oh no, things can't get better. This is just the way it is.
There seemed like there was absolutely no way out for it. Because it just felt like it was.
Yeah.
And for me, the biggest turnaround time was, it was May 13th, 2016, I still remember. And it was a chance encounter with a friend. I hadn't spoken to anybody in about 2 months. And I sent him a message out of the blue. I don't even know why I did it. It was just some wave of motivation, inspiration, some little blip on the radar. And I sent him a text, and we ended up going out to get dinner. And he saw, I must have seen something in me that was just fucking in a horrendous way. And I had not told anybody for the whole about year and a half that I'd been really, really down in the depths about what was going on.
Mm.
And he kind of just managed to pull it out of me. And the thing that he just told me about journaling. But, and like, we hear about this stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything magical, but what that flipped the switch in my mind was, there is something out there that I can do.
Mm.
That if I do it really consistently, what he said was like, yeah, you just write all of the things that you're afraid of and you're suffering and you're scared of people finding out. You just write those down on a piece of paper. You look at that in the fucking face. And if you're willing to own that that's true, then that takes so much of the power away from people finding out about that.
Wow.
And he just said, if you just go and do it and then do it more and then ask why, and then ask why, okay, why is that there? Why is that there? Why is that there? And this is just one tool. There were a million tools, but I'd never even, it was like a light bulb moment. I never considered that there was a thing that I could go and do that would make me better. That would make some, not even better, that would make some
it would
tiny
do something.
Incremental improvement.
Mm.
That if I was consistent with that on the other side, things would be a small sliver better. And that's why I really resonate with what you just said, because in some places where they feel like there's no fucking hope, that's not an option on the menu. Doing something to make your situation better is not an option I see. And so I think it's so powerful that something also happened to you as well, where it was just like, wow, I do have some say in this game. I have some power. And I know for me that night, I went home from that dinner, I wrote 5,000 words on my laptop. Fucking spilled out of me. I still have those. It's
hilarious. Wow.
I still have them. It's still hilarious to read. And I journaled every single day for I don't know how many months. And it was just like, but it was the same thing. It was just, I found something. It wasn't perfect. It didn't fix everything, but I found something to start becoming consistent.
So glad you had a friend like that there, though. Like, that was just willing to sit down with you and have a beer.
Shout out James Dewan. He is, honestly saved my life on more than one occasion. So,
that's lovely.
Yeah. But
yeah,
I would love to throw it back over to you. And one thing I'd really love to hear about is, what role, at any point, did training take on new meaning for you?
Mm.
What role did training play in your life, as some form of structural thing? What was that like for you to find this thing that now you understood that you could do this, even if it's a small thing, a single leg glute bridge?
Mm.
What did that mean for you, and what did it look like for you after that?
I think training for me, that moment came in two different sort of ways, or three. The first was when I started realizing I needed to do something every day, or I want, no, I wanted to do something every day, and I chose that thing to be, I'm just going to go to the gym and I'll do my thing. Yeah, yeah. Like I told you before. The second was when I started making a plan about my day. When I'd sort of switched, I moved from criminology to psychology at the University of Newcastle, and all of a sudden I was on this path that I was passionate about and wanted to complete, and you know, I read a lot about the value of making a plan for the day and or for the week, and you know, executing a plan like that, and you know, trading was, you know, what I structured my study around, not vice versa. You know, I was sort of in this period where I was just like, oh, you know, the weight loss took precedence. It was the thing that was most prominent in my mind, and the training was sort of supplementary to that. That was how I felt about that at that point in my life. Purely because it was just gym, and you know, or I'd get up and I'd go for a walk, and then I'd do what I coined in my own little way back then, just like my metabolic exercises. Yeah, you know, I was just like, I'm gonna get my fat burning juices growing and stuff like that. Yeah. I was just like, you know, and it was just like basically a bunch of full body exercises and stuff like that with dumbbell work and core work and stuff like that. That was what I was leaning into. And then, you know, and then I'd have a section of study for the day, and then I'd go for a walk, and then another section of study, and then I'd train again in the evening. That was my day. Because back then it was like, I have to train 12 times a week. That was kind of different kettle of fish. So yeah, during this entire period after that first 6 months, I was training every morning and afternoon, Monday to Saturday.
Damn.
Because I was just like, because I'm not going to lose weight if I don't do that. But that's obviously not, I didn't recommend that, but that's, I was just very dedicated and I really wanted that. And my exercise physiologist to her credit, Georgia, was just like, Nick, this is too much.
Yeah.
Stop doing this. This is way too much.
Yeah.
And I was just like, stuff you, Georgia. You don't know what you're talking about.
No,
that's
it, yeah.
You know? But like, fortunately for me, I wasn't getting injured or anything like that. So, you know, I was lucky in that respect, but I obviously don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Then obviously the third wave of training was when I came here and I saw what everyone was doing. And I was just like, oh my God, I want to do that.
Mm.
Oh my gosh, I want to do this. You know, I saw Rod doing his handstands or his press, and I love telling this story, but when I first got here, it was Rod and Damo who were here, and Damo had just seen me for my first appointment. He was telling me about the type of training that they were doing here and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, how long do you think it would take for me to do a handstand, Damo? And I was like, do you reckon I could get it done in 8 weeks? Because back then I was like, I want to achieve something every 8 weeks. That was like something I had in mind. I was like, I can do anything in 8 weeks because I got my glute bridge in 8 weeks.
Yes.
For like a year or two, I was like, I can do anything in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So that was where I was at with that. And I was like, do you think I could do a handstand in 8 weeks? And Dan was like, yeah, man. I was like, you think? And I was like, do you reckon I could do a press to handstand? And he was like, absolutely. And I was just like, looking back, I was just like, well played, Damo. I signed up. I was just like, congrats, man.
That's hilarious.
So really sucking me into that one. You know, what, over 2.5 years later now,
yeah.
Still working for that press to handstand.
Yeah.
But you know, I was excited. I was excited about doing something, you know, as opposed to having something as a byproduct to get that weight loss that I was trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And you know, I could go on and on about all the things that I would still love to do. And
yeah, man. Again, something that we were kind of speaking about this before we got started, but something that the reason I asked you to come on here and the reason that I find your story so powerful is because I hear fucking, like, whether it's weight loss or transformation stories, and they're all so fucking nice and neatly wrapped in a bow. It's like, and then I did this and I used this method and it's just, my life is different.
Like, and you can do it too.
Yeah.
Maybe 200 small windows.
Legit. And like, that's never the way it goes down. I mean, maybe it is for some people, and more power to you if it is.
Hmm.
But that's never the way that it really fucking goes down on the inside. And the thing I really take issue with that is that when inevitably someone gets this inspiration from, because man, I really believe there'll be people who listen to the story, be like, holy fucking shit, the amount of stuff you have overcome is fucking
it's insane. Mm-hmm. It's nuts. And that is going to create inspiration in people. But then for them, that person to go and think, maybe somebody's in pain. Maybe someone wants to lose weight. Maybe someone's like, damn, that guy overcame that. I've got some shit I want to overcome. Maybe that's possible too.
Yeah.
And not that it's perfect, not that we're all fucking sitting here in line now, but just that like, there was some shit that was really fucking hard and I made a decision to make it slightly better and I'm still making that fucking decision every day. That is a fucking incredibly powerful place to get yourself to. Yeah. Because even if shit is really fucking hard still, you're still in the fucking game forever.
Mm.
And the problem with these really fucking nicely, neatly wrapped testimonial fucking stories is that it never plays out like that. And so I know that when I started to go on my, you know, equivalent journey of mental health, I had this bullshit narrative in my head that it was some like movie montage and then you come out the other side and shit's just perfect. And I know that's dumb, but it's still what it felt like inside.
Mm.
And so when I hear you tell your story, I want to make it very fucking clear that this is not a, hey man, everyone needs to go do a keto diet and then train fucking 14 times a week and then that's the way to do it. No, and that's not what you're saying either. But it was a serious...
I hope not.
Yeah. Hi. Actually.
Is that what I said?
No. That's not what you said at all. But like, you know, it's this series of decision and iteration. And doing things maybe slightly for the wrong reasons. Maybe for it's not the perfect thing. Maybe it had some other impacts. But it's still the decision to just be like, okay, that didn't really work. This fucked up.
Mm.
But I'm just going to keep going. And I'm just going to keep going. And I'm just going to keep going.
Mm.
And that's a fucking message. Mm. That's reality. That's how shit really changes. In messy, incremental ways that don't always feel hopeful. There's not always a fucking magical turning point. It's like, this is how it really happens, man. And I love what you said about just finding something because it looks cool. That's the only fucking reason that you need to do something, especially with your, when it comes to training and your body. There's a billion things to do.
Yeah.
And so just because you find a thing that's like, I want to do this for its own sake. That is something I hope is in store for more people. And I think it is, if you just keep on looking.
Yeah. And we had a conversation maybe a couple of months to a year ago now. And it was, and I was having a lull, you know, when I first got here, it was so obvious to me. I was like, oh, I really want to do a handstand and I really want to do a muscle up, like on the rings. Like those would be incredible goals. Like I can't imagine ever doing something like that. And you know, I applied the same trial and tribulation. And I tried to get tips from everyone. I kept trying different methods. I trained with you, I trained with Chris, and I trained with Rod, and I trained with everyone I could get my hands on. And and you know, 18 months later, I you know, did a handstand that I could call a handstand, and I did my first muscle up. It was an incredible moment for me, you know, to put in that much work for that long to achieve that. But afterwards, I had a lull. I was like, I was a little bit lost. I didn't know what I was doing, you know, but I was still training with you at the time. I was like, okay, I want to do something. I'll try some weakness training. I'll try buff up my hamstrings or something like that. But I still didn't know why or what I was doing, but I was still at the gym every single day. I was like, and that wasn't a question for me, but it was a question for you. You were just like, okay, well, why are you still here? And I was just like, It's not about training. Is never just about training for me.
Mm.
Just like it was back then. It's about getting out of the house. Yeah. You know, still is. It's about being around people.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, how I, you know, whether you were enjoying your training that day or not, how do I feel the rest of the day? You know, how am I going to feel a year from now? You know?
Yeah.
And there's that pull and that push as well. I personally am always running away from this pain on one half of it. So that's not meant to be so scary, you know, like that pain still arises for me in my stomach sometimes. And that can always be a reminder,
yeah.
But I'm also running towards things that excite me. I want to be stronger and I want to be capable of doing more and more. And I look up to you, you know, a year from now, I look up to Rod 10 years from now and Virgo 20 years from now, and I see a future that I'd be so happy in more than just the physicality of it living. So it doesn't matter if you're just running away from something, you know? And so yeah, I had a lull, but I was here for more than just the cool tricks or the training, you know, even though they're great,
yeah,
you know, but and to bring in another conversation we had just a week ago, you know, where I am right now is I left the weight alone for about a year and a half now at this point, but I'm just picking it back up again because I'm still 100 kilos odd now, and that can make some of the body weight exercises more difficult. It's a reasonable tactic to increase my ability to do some of these skills, you know, but I'm doing it in a completely different way than I did 2 or 3 years ago. I'm doing it much slower. I'm not doing keto anymore. and it's not at the expense of how I feel throughout the day. You know, I make sure I still feel good. And vice versa, I'm doing that training that was making me bang my head against the wall back then, which is trying to get some hip flexibility and some compression work going. And I had to contextualize that for myself so that there was also more than one reason. Oh, I'm not just doing that because it's a known weakness for me. You know, it's going to help me feel better because I sit in a chair studying most days. It's going to help me get to a press to handstand 2.5 years later demo. and you know, that guy got me signed up so quick. You know? Yeah, so like it's going to help me sit. It's going to make me feel better when I move about throughout the day, you know? Like it's more than just this weakness training. And I think having more than one reason and, you know, and the diet as well. The diet's going to help me execute those skills, but, you know, I still want to look good, you know? Amen. That's always a good.
Yeah.
And like I said the other day, you know, it's okay to have this insecurity, you know, like, which is me wanting to look a certain way mixed in with these other things. Like it's genuinely going to help me do some skills that I would like to do if I lose a little bit of weight, you know, and that's okay. That's 100% okay. And me wanting to look a certain way doesn't have to be ostracized amongst all of that.
Absolutely.
It's just a thing.
Yep. And the more that we get to be honest about that without the judgment, without the fucking baggage about, hey man, this is just a thing that I want.
Hmm.
Maybe it's a partly for other people too. So other people think that, like, it's exactly the same for me, man. And I know what I love about what you're saying is that there's nothing, the stories that we tell ourselves about why we train or everything, because they inform what we do and how we see what we do and how what we do makes us feel. There's nothing in, I don't know, there's physiological benefits for sure. But that aside, the meaning, the stories that we've created around it are so fucking important as well. And the stories that we allow ourselves to tell ourselves as well. Because, and having multiple sources, multiple reasons, a web of meaning and a web of motivation means that when one of those points of motivation fails, it's not the fucking only thing. I do believe training only for the sole purpose of looking good for other people is not a healthy thing to do. I've done it. It really was not good for me.
Yeah.
But to cast that out and to be like, it's no longer a thing that I can want because it's vain or shallow is also not the way.
Yeah.
It's like invited to be like, sure, man, I would fucking love to look fucking sexy as.
Yeah.
And to also, yes, for me and fucking yeah, for other people, it's going to feel great if I get that validation, but it's not the only fucking thing. No. It's also, what can I do with my body? But I'm also not going to fucking beat myself over the head if I can't do a fucking press the handstand or fucking, you know, whatever it is yet. And it's, what are you, why the fuck can't you do a press the handstand? I can do one, so I'm fine. I'm enlightened.
Yeah.
No, man, like, I think what, like, having that fucking honest conversation with yourself. What do I care about? And then how do I go about making a plan for myself so that it touches on all of these different things? And when one of those things get hard, it's like, number one, you have been to some very, very dark places.
Mm.
And you know what it's like. And that is very, very, very reason for you to keep going.
Yeah.
And also, there's things in front of you, like you're saying, there's goals that excite you for many, many different reasons, but they're fucking honest.
Yep.
And that's just something I really... I'm so glad that you're talking about it, because I think it's just something that we can normalize and talk about more.
100%. Yeah. I think that's why I'm still here 2.5 years later. Yeah. And like, I can't imagine being anywhere else in that respect. And you know, if that changes, that's okay too.
Yep.
You know, maybe those reasons will change one day and maybe I'll go and enjoy it swimming or something instead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's following that curiosity. It's following that internal voice of just some drive of like, I want to do that. Just because I fucking do.
Yeah.
Not because it's the right thing or it's the most fucking evidence-based thing or whatever. It's like, nah, man, like, what do you want to fucking do?
But you are giving me evidence-based stuff, right?
100. study done by scientists.
Research
shows press the handstands make you more attractive.
Yeah.
To people who...
Calling me unattractive.
I'm just saying when you get your press. I'm just
saying you can't do a press.
Man, just to start to land the plane, like, this might, I don't want this to sound like an inane question, but like, what was the major thing that you learned from going through the experience that you did? What was the biggest learning that you took away from that whole experience?
Man, it's not the most profound answer, but it is the thing that's stuck with me the most, and I think it's maybe the most important thing, because it's not just about training, it's about life. And it's you just are where you are. Like, and you can't talk yourself out of that. You can't like shift your starting point. You know, as much as I couldn't, you know, start with a 2 kilo bicep curl instead of a 1, you know, because if I had, I wouldn't have kept going. Mm. You know, I had to start at where I was and what I was capable of, you know, and just like where I am in, and I have to remind myself, because I'm still studying, you know, still, and I'm, and at parts of me sometimes feel behind, you know, because I had that period of my life where I wasn't able to do anything or work or anything like that. And there's a lot of insecurity attached to that. But, you know, but here I am 5 years into my study with 2 degrees now, I'm still going away. I just am where I am. And I can't, as much as I would like it, I can't be 1 year further. I can't be a registered psychologist yet. I just am where I am, and I have to do my best. And I have to do the work where I am now. I have to start there. And I think just be honest with yourself. It's okay to not be capable of everything you would like to be right now. Because if you start where you are, then you can be one day.
I think that's a very fucking profound answer, actually. Very fucking impressive. Never mind.
I killed it.
Yeah. Man, I genuinely want to say thank you for coming on and doing this, man. I know I can see that it's still very fucking painful to talk about. And yeah, and so I want to be really respectful of that as well. And I want to say thanks very much for coming on and doing this, man, because I always learn something when I hear you talk about your story. And I think, yeah, man, I really enjoyed having a chat with you like this, man.
Thanks for giving me space to talk about it, man. I appreciate it. It's the first time I've done anything like this. So I love you, brother.
I don't think it'll be the last, bro. Welcome to you, man.